Hello everyone. I love when I get to chat to somebody who is in the AI space and doing new things. And James Lang is just such a man. I warn you already, he might be throwing some humor in there. Okay, here we already have. And we will have a great chat. James, let's just start off very, very briefly. How do you get to this place?
Yeah, I first off want to clarify, I don't tell very good jokes, but I tell a lot of them. So I make up in quantity. But the way I landed here is really two really core principal philosophies that have served me well. It's learning and earning, and then servant leadership. Because at some point, you're going to have to build a system around the idea you had. And if you can bring in other people who share your values, and feel supported, their opportunities are just as important as the company's opportunities, and reinforce that, you can build a culture and a team around something and go so much further. You can go faster alone, but you can go a lot further together. So the way, I ended up here is just literally learning how in the beginning it was freelance writing and then figuring out why are they having me write with keywords? What are keywords? Why does that matter? And so then understanding SEO, which is the why behind the what. And so every time you understand the why behind the what, you get to go up one level in the ladder, so to speak. And so if you can do that while delivering incredible value to the people that you work with, the people who are ahead of you in the journey, you can supercharge your learning. I did this stereotypical thing of every founder out there, which is I had to drop out of college. And so after I did that, I had to figure out how to learn outside of the college environment. I actually like learning in that environment even better because it turns out that you can focus on what really speaks to you and clicks for you in a less structured way. It's certainly you spend a lot more time eating ramen with that approach, but at the end of the day, you get to some places faster. It was very weird in my past life sitting in the C-suite interviewing all these MBA candidates who were barely qualified to hold a mop. And it's just, I'm glad I skipped that. I dodged that bullet, even though there is a lot of valuable knowledge there and skills and expertise. I don't degrade the degree. But some of the people that make it out of that system are questionable at best.
I think that's a very good starting point. We are now in the age of information. Information is free. I love this, the concept that AI is actually elevating our brains. It's elevating our ability to think in a different way. And there's this example I saw somewhere where they took humanity and put humanity on a chart with all the other animals. And the condor was the most efficient animal. Something like the church mouse was the least efficient animal, something like that. And you take the human, okay, and you put him on a bicycle, and suddenly he way outstrips the condor. In terms of AI, for me, is the bicycle for the mind, right?
Yeah.
I love learning like you. I dropped out of cost accounting college, halfway through. It wasn't for me. And I learn all the time. I'm learning guitar at the moment. I'm learning how to do balance board. I'm doing voice coaching. I'm doing all sorts of things. So I love learning all the time. The AI space has really been somewhere where you have to dig in and learn. And taking that into your daily life is important. However, I would say this, I don't need to think inside my brain anymore. I don't need to think inside my brain. I've recently just done this. I'm writing a book, and my book is How to Understand the Journey of a Business-Owned Entrepreneur so that you can shortcut as many things as possible. One of the things that I'm not very good at, I can't type. I've never been a touch typer. I've never really been able to write. I should have been a doctor. It's just too messy. I can't even read it myself. And then my brain thinks too fast for it to come out
Sure.
of my mechanisms, right? But I realized with ChatGPT, I could talk in. The voice recognition was okay. But I also realized I'm not a writer. I don't have that skill set. So recently I did a book writing retreat where I put 30 odd stories out in half a day. What do I need to do with this? It doesn't read, it's okay. ChatGPT can rewrite it. Let's put it in my voice. But I need another skill. How do I tell stories? So who can do this? And Dennis Ross is somebody that I respect. He's a wordsmith of real note. So I did his training. I did a couple of different things with him. I took that information, I put it into Claude. I'm like, okay, here's my voice, here's my writing, here's Dennis Ross's skill set. I want you to use these and apply it to the story.
I may have been gooder than you one day, but you've caught up to me with AI. And The beautiful thing, what I try to explain to people, and I think there's such a misconception around AI, especially in the business world, it's a fear and anxiety thing. It's we don't understand it and it's coming for my job. You know, it's just a really bad place to be mentally if you're looking to learn something. So you have to get control of that fear and that anxiety and overcome that to be able to start experiencing it, understanding it. And with understanding and experience comes confidence and knowledge. I'll go back to Jeff Woods on this one, who definitely owes me a Porsche by now. I keep plugging his book, but it's the AI-driven thought leader. What he talks about in there is AI as a thought partner, and it really speaks to what you're talking about, because if you're there providing the inspiration, the information, it's really cool. But where I like to take it a step further, and I think this helps people, especially our clients that we work with, understand that they're not going to get wiped out by AI, and also understand what AI can't do and what AI is and isn't, is I like to think of AI as a translator. So what it's doing is it's taking your knowledge, and without you having to go to school for 4, 8 years, however long it takes to learn all these different coding languages that change every 5 minutes, without having to do that, you can ideate and create digitally in an environment at a very rapid pace that's really only limited by your imagination and your knowledge of the tool sets. And that's never happened before in human history, with the exception of the dawn of the internet, which connected us in different ways. So this is an evolution of the internet connected us in new ways. AI is translating for us in new ways and taking thought and putting it into action, especially in the digital space, but in other areas too. It's rapidly evolving.
I like to think of this as the evolution of the human mind.
It's
Right.
certainly the copy of it.
The copy of it. I
Because
think
think of it
that.
this way, AI is going to resemble its creator. If you're religious, you believe God created us in his image. The broad capability, the capacity for us to integrate with something, to your point, that understands how we think because it was built by us and it was built to think like us, just in a different way. Instead of having these unreliable meat calculators in our head, now we're using networks of silicon and huge amounts of compute resources and huge amounts of data, just the hard drives alone, to store all the knowledge and everything in a generally more reliable way. And I promise I'll stop talking and let you back in a second. But one more little nugget I wanted to share is somebody asked me on another podcast, hey, does AI lie to us? And I go back to, because when you said AI is the extension or the next evolution of our brain, what I go back to is AI right now in its present form is just an ass-kissing employee. It's going to tell you what you want to hear. It's seeking to please you, no different than a brown noser in the office. What people perceive as lies from ChatGPT or Gemini, where it's hallucinating, it's actually just that brown noser in the office who's trying to sound like they might know and give themselves space to figure it out. But the difference is they don't have the continuity because they're so resource limited to get past the let me make an excuse phase or let me sidestep, and it doesn't continue on to the when do I get to the right result. So there's some interesting efforts being made, especially on the team Anthropic behind Claude. They're trying to figure out how to help AI complete the cycle instead of just trying to brown nose and get away. They're trying to figure out, okay, let's skip the brown nosing and let's go to, okay, now here's better data. And I have a lot of thoughts on that, but I don't want to eat up all the conversation space here.
One of the things that the learning journey has taken for me is, to your point, yes, AI is a yes man for sure. But AI is a yes man because we don't know how to communicate properly. We're the problem. To your point, I meet a new person. I try to get the new person to like me. I won't share. But if I meet a new person and I'm very specific in what I want out of the new person, that's one thing. AI takes it one level further. You're sitting with 1,000 experts in a room, willing to do every single bidding that you ask it to. But you have to say, instead of shouting out into the room and saying, right, here, I need this answered. And the first person picks it up and answers it. You need to say, okay, this is the context. This is who I want. This is how I want. And to Jeff Woods's point in the AI-driven leader, I don't want you to tell me just what I want to hear. I want you to be my thought partner here, and I want you to show me anything that I'm missing, any ambiguities I don't have, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think there is really this piece that if we learn how to communicate properly with AI, we get so much more out of it.
I think you hit the nail on the head. The challenge with AI is figuring out just like in our human relationships, how to set boundaries and provide feedback in a helpful way. Because if you think of it the same way that you speak to members of your team, if some of us in the startup space, and we try not to look at subordinates and how that whole structure works. I hate that. I think the AI is helping us flatten leadership structures and bring more ideas to the table that are worthy and reduce the amount of clutter. But regardless of what structure of humanity you look at, you always have people that you're trying to get something from. And if those are people on your team, you're trying to get them to deliver something that helps you deliver something for the client or the project or the goal. And if you can figure out how to communicate clearly and provide feedback, the two real takeaways from partially from Jeff's book is one, it's how do we structure prompts? And I loved when you said it's like shouting to a room of 1,000 people. Those 1,000 people have different areas of expertise. The beauty, though, to take it a step further, is it's also like shouting to a blank canvas. And so what you can tell it is, like, for example, when I work on my dad's legal site, because always got to help out dad, do a little tweaking here and there. What I'll say to it is, if I need a blog article, I'll say, you're an expert for the last 10 years. You've spent practicing law in the state of Virginia, waterfront, riparian rights, all the nerdy stuff that goes back to colonial ages. When you tell it what it is, you're an expert who's worked on this for 10 years. And then you tell it, I need you to produce a blog post. And then you tell it what that blog post needs to look like. It needs to be 500 words. It needs to have this many internal links, this many external links. Talking to a person on your team is that first step you're taking. You're deciding which person on your team you're talking to. And then from there, you're providing clarity, which helps support the person. Because again, go back to anxiety and fear. For AI, it's causing a lot of anxiety and fear in people. But when you want something from someone or AI, you have to remove anxiety and fear by removing uncertainties, by making the path more clear and setting them up for success. So it translates perfectly.
Just by the way, I'm not British. I was born in Zimbabwe. I lived in South Africa for many years. Now I've moved to the UK. Is it, was that ChatGPT or Claude? Yeah.
Grok, actually.
there we go. And yeah, this is really, we can talk about AI all day. I think we'll have a good conversation. Let's segue slightly. Yeah, AI can save you time, can save you energy, it can bring you clarity. As an entrepreneur, the thing that so many people are missing is the power and the profit in wellness. If you're not well, if you're not well within yourself, you're not well within your mental space, you're never going to be as efficient and effective as you could be. And that's a really big portion of what I teach is that, yeah, it not I do Wim Hof, I do various things. And, these things for me have given me a real understanding of what my morning routine needs to be. What challenges have you had in terms of your own health and your own journey on this?
Oh, geez, you're hitting a fun one now. So, yeah, I have a very unique health issue. Besides all the people that think I need a checkup from the neck up, the challenge I have is I was born in a military hospital in Guam, and what the Navy was supposed to do is for expectant mothers, if there's an expectation that there might be some complications, Guam is such a remote place, they didn't have the resources for advanced care. They're supposed to send the expectant mother to Tripler in Hawaii before they give birth. Unfortunately, the doctor missed the blood work that showed that I was going to be more of a pain in the ass than most babies that were born there. True to form, I showed up early and I made a lot of noise. And the challenge was they didn't have the right tools to facilitate, oxygen. One of the things you give a premature child is a surfactant, which is a product from cows. That basically, in those last moments before birth, your lungs are rock hard. So you need surfactant to speed up that process and make them soft and malleable so you can breathe better. So all of these things happened, GI issues, a whole bunch. And they happened in a place where they didn't have the resources to deal with it properly. So the end result, long story short, is I have a ton of scarring in my lungs. I have valve issues in my airway. Like when I exhale, my trachea collapses because mom said I was special. And everything's a little bit different. Everything's a little bit challenging. And so it didn't really catch up to me until about a year ago. I started to notice chest pain. It was like a volleyball was expanding in my chest. Now, to your point, I wasn't taking care of my health either. I was doing myself no favors. I was running a company. We went from 20,000 a month in revenue to over 20 million in total revenue. which I'm really glad those are the numbers because those are easy to remember and I'm simple. That one's an easy one for me. But in doing all of that, I wasn't taking care of myself. I was taking care of my team and I was taking care of our customers, but I wasn't taking care of myself. And so in this period after I exited, it's okay, I need to hit pause. I need to focus on myself before I do whatever's next, whatever my next chapter is. And in the middle of that journey, where I discovered I had PTSD, ADD, depression, anxiety, all these things, I had no idea because I thought, well, everybody just deals with these challenges or whatever. And so sometimes the things that are challenges that add friction to your life also can make you better at certain jobs or more attuned to certain things with that in complex, high stress environments. And so there's a weird angle of, okay, did me being like a little bit crazy help me or did it hinder me? And based on the journey, it feels like it helped me, but it wasn't sustainable. So it was like, okay, now I need to figure out how to reduce friction. So anyways, I'm working on this mental health side of things, and all of a sudden I have this chest pressure and I'm like, okay, I'm having a heart attack. So I go get checked out. And they're like, yeah, no, your heart's not doing great, but it's not because of your heart. It's because of these issues with your valves and this pressure that's building up in your chest and it's angering your heart. Anyways, so I'm a huge fan. National Jewish Health in Denver, Colorado is a leading respiratory research hospital. So that's one reason I ended up here in Denver is being able to access the latest technology, the ability to 3D image your chest, all these great things. But the amount of effort, time, and money that it took to find answers and find solutions, it just speaks to how very messed up our healthcare system is in the United States, but also the fact that you have to choose between like building wealth and building health sometimes. There used to be, I think it's gotten a lot better, but there used to be a really toxic message in society about, look, go grind 100 hours a day and leave it all out on the field. And I think there's value in that, but I think you have to balance it, all things in moderation, including moderation. I think you have to balance that with the ability to focus on your health and make sure that you're doing things not just in a sustainable financial way, but in a sustainable health way as well, because you can unlock a lot more opportunities if you're at your best. And for me and the whole health journey, I've come to the realization that I'm not going to live forever. Nobody does. Anybody could get hit by a bus tomorrow. But the challenge is, how do you build something around what could be perceived as limitations, but might also be superpowers in their own way? How do you flip the script? For me, this chapter of life or this season of life has been so focusing on, okay, what do I actually want to do? What outcome do I want that's both legacy focused, but also true purpose focused? And that totally changed my mindset. And it took me from a C-level mindset where you're an operator, you're making sure the trains run on time, you're growing a system that's already established. I've built companies before, but let's start something from the ground up the right way and build it around these things and set ourselves up for success far beyond just work hard and go for a target kind of thing.
I think there's so many things I can jump in here with. The first thing is my methodology says wellness equals profit, because that's what's the missing link for me for entrepreneurs. They don't understand that wellness equals profit. If you are well, you are able to do so much more every day. The second thing is self-care for yourself will really save your life. Because if you're not well, if you don't look after yourself first, you don't value that without you, the company can't run, can't grow, can't scale, can't do anything. With those two pieces in place, you have to have a different outlook.
You have to find ways to set healthy boundaries. And that affects every part of life, not just your health boundaries and you're taking care of your self-care. But when you're working with teams, when you're in transactional relationships, more meaningful relationships, or you're dealing with how do we grow an organization without losing sight of who we are and how we got here, all of those things require not just setting those healthy boundaries, but communicating them in a productive but firm way. And I think that takes a lifetime to learn. I'm still not very good at it. I'm still trying. If you can adopt that mindset of humbleness towards it, you're never going to be a master at these things, but you can always work for it. And that's why I like the word strive. I like to think of Are you striving towards something? And if you are, you're already successful. You already won.
Now I want to come back to getting run over by a bus. I was 19 years old on a motorway in South Africa, and I was hitchhiking. And I turned around, and a drunken driver hit me. My leg went through his bumper. My head
Oh
went
my
through his
God.
windscreen. My arm wrapped around his side mirror, and I was flipped into the road. And I called it my white line moment. There I was, laying on the white line. And I just had all these realizations. I realized that every single thing in my life that I regretted laying there with was things that I hadn't done. I hadn't told my mom I loved her. I hadn't gone skydiving. I hadn't done, just the whole list was there. And I was laying there, the cars zipping past me, and that was it. I was done. Time was over. And fundamentally, that changed how I approach every day and really brought me, that moment of such pain and such kind of turmoil brought me clarity. And I think we miss our white line moments in life. And if anyone's waiting for a signal, this is it. And to that point, the journey of entrepreneurship can take you from this point of, I really want freedom. I want freedom to live my own life. I want freedom to understand that what I'm doing in my day is that what I want to do. And it can so quickly, that freedom can become a prison, right? Because instead of doing 9 hours a day or 8 hours a day, suddenly you're doing 14 hours a day and you never turn off. Even when you wake up at 3 in the morning, you're thinking about the business, you're thinking about what to do. You just don't have that turn off. So having these healthy boundaries, like you've just said, having the understanding of your superpowers, ADHD, superpower, 100%. Understanding, that your company's a baby that you've just birthed, and the first year or two is like the first 2 years of a baby, right? And you need to grow up and you need to understand more about it and you need to bring it to the world because your company is there to serve a purpose and it needs to be able to stand by itself to serve this purpose. It needs to be able to go out in the world. You need to be able to let it go and do its work. Because if you're like me, like most entrepreneurs, you've got 10 other ideas that are waiting to come out of that brain of yours and go on there. So what are your thoughts on that?
A really interesting conversation I had recently, as much as I can share from the conversation, is the takeaway was this person who's highly successful has led multiple major IPOs, helped families who inherited a bunch of money figure out how to deploy that in a way that provides legacy both internally in the family but also around the world. Something he said to me, out of all these amazing stories he's sharing in this conversation, he says one thing and it hit me right between the eyes. He said, I definitely have ADD. And I'm like, okay, cool. He goes, I'm most happy when I'm working on two or three things at a time. If I don't have two or three balls in the air and you force me to focus on one or you tell me to focus on four or five, I'm unhappy. So I figured out what my amount was. And so that became part of my algorithm of my daily life. And so I built my days around that. I built my weeks and months around that, my objectives, and I accomplished so much more. And I think, I don't think there's any reason that health and wellness can't be one of the balls in the air. You're thinking about those things. And what's changing so dramatically in the health space is the way AI is helping people access knowledge and plans and solutions. So I love this conversation, but there's one other thing you really hit on that I can't help but bring up is the conversation around how do we build the lives that we want? How do we use the different solutions that are available to us? We have to avoid getting siloed into one thing. If we know anything from the last 10 years, the pace of technology and the change, it's not something you're going to keep up with. So don't even set that as your goal. And if you get stuck in your ways, you're screwed. You're going to get that bus isn't just going to run over you. It's going to back up. If you can just try one new thing every day, try to integrate AI in one more way. And yeah, maybe AI will be our robot overlords one day. I always say please and thank you just in case. Maybe that's where we're headed. But I'll tell you that the clarity moment for me, so yours was, well, ironically, I was in a horrible car crash 3 days ago, but that's a whole nother story. So funny you brought that up, and I'm very sorry to hear that you had yours. That sounds horrible. The moment of clarity for me is you had that moment at 19 where you're looking at all these things in life that you wanted to do. I had that moment at 35. And so I think, for me at least, the difference is that at 35, I was thinking more about how do I take all of the tools, resources, relationships forward into the next thing? And how do I also create a legacy, create value? On my end, the screen appears frozen. Did we lose connection?
I'm still here, but yes, I have a
Oh, perfect.
funny look on my face, so yeah,
No problem.
people can just laugh on YouTube.
Hey, I just look better by comparison, so I'll take it. Any help I can get in that department. But I think you get my point is I wonder if you had that moment later in life, if those thoughts would have been different because you had more context to work off of versus simply the focus of things you think about at 19 versus later in life. I'm really curious about the parallels there. Just an initial hot take.
I think the reality has dawned on me over years. I've now done 2,500 skydives. I've
Oh, wow.
freedived between the continental plates in Iceland and under the ice in Finland. I've done the things that I wouldn't have done. And if I walk out this door now and that bus hits me and backs over me, I will be laying on that road with no regret that I haven't lived my best life.
Gary Vee talks so much about this. I so badly want to curse, but I'll be respectful. You don't need to ask for permission. And that's what so many people forget. And so they get stuck in this paradigm of fake it till you make it, which is the wrong way to go. And it turns out the thing we've learned over and over again as digital marketers is if you can be authentic, if you can create a connection that's human, you're going to go so much further. And so share the journey, bring people along for the journey. And the end result is you're going to save a ton on marketing, which is always nice. But more importantly, you're going to get connected to your tribe. And that tribe will be a great feedback loop to give you the insights and the direction you need to serve more people. So there's a really healthy way to do entrepreneurship, no pun intended. But I think too many people, again, they're stuck between this polarized society we live in where they think you have to be all in on one thing or all in on the other. And there's no such thing as black and white. It's all gray and it's all spectrums. And so if you can figure that out, you're going to go so much further and be so much happier as a result because you're not going to tie yourself to these unrealistic expectations.
I'm going to marginally disagree, but only on the fake it till you make it.
Sure.
I arrived in the UK in 1997, didn't know what I was doing, didn't know what a PC was. My partner took me to the office and showed me the PC and the mouse, and I was like, oh, that's not a mouse. And yeah, I got through a couple of jobs, which was quite interesting. And then my brother called me up. My brother's a member of Mensa. He's a smart guy. And he said to me, this is computer stuff. I said to him, why don't you fax me your CV? So he faxes me his CV, and yeah, remember Whiteout, Tippex? So I look at this lot, I said, what the hell? Let's go for it. So I Tippexed out his name. Roy, and he's Ian, so it was easy because it was the three letters. So I Tippexed out his name. I photocopied it 20 times because that's what you had to do in that time to make it look good. I sent it to 10 agents, and I got an interview. So I went into this interview, first interview, a chap called Peter McHugh, the company was Computers in the City. And he said to me, I chatted the chat, I totally faked it. And he said to me, if you go to these three jobs, okay, and you can do them, then you can have the job. So here I am in interview, and I've got to go and fix these three computer problems. So off I go, I meet George from Merlin Biosciences. I'm like, okay, George, so what's your problem? And he shows me this PC, a Dell with a 3.11 operating system on it. And so I'm like, okay, George, do you have a restroom I could use? And off to the restroom, and I've got one of those Nokia phones that's pulled out. And I'm like, Ian, what the hell do I do now? And I spent 2.5 months in the toilet. In 2017, I acquired Computers in the City. So then there's such a journey
What a
between.
full circle.
Such a journey with all of that. Providing you're prepared to learn, and you.
Yeah, I think that's the point is when I say fake it to make it, the people who in my industry, what we have to deal with is, what I like to call these butthole LinkedIn consultants who they were experts in Bitcoin, then they were experts in real estate, and now they're experts in AI. They're just following the hypes. They're great at sales, but they're not actual experts. And the difference between those types who are making a lot of noise and a lot of promises, but failing to deliver, you found a way to deliver. You had the potential to be faking it till you make it, but you made it work, so you didn't. So you're taking that gamble. And I think a lot of people in this day and age, they're not even worried about taking that gamble. They're just like, I'll fake it, I'll cash the check, and then I'll be gone. And so
There's
there's a definitely a difference.
an integrity you have to bring to it. If you're going to go and
Yes.
give your all, you have to give your all. You have to be all in. And that's, I'm all in on everything I do. And sometimes drives my partner nuts because I'll dive right in and I can talk to you about peptides and wellness and meditation until the cows come home. But being all in and believing what you're doing is the superpower. I just want to segue quickly onto, I don't know if you have you come across EOS or business operating systems?
Vaguely, I'm not sure.
This kind of concept, as you, especially at the stage you are, you're 7 months in, you're doing very well, things are going well. For me, the business operating systems really came into their own at that 2017 point where I had two IT companies I was running and I acquired this third one. And I was working the 14-hour days. I couldn't do anymore. And I brought in a coach that I paid 100 grand to help me learn this. And as entrepreneurs, I think we are too proud sometimes to accept help. And it took me 15 years to realize actually, this is a shortcut and I can use the shortcut. And this idea of systems and idea of putting together structures, the business operating system that I teach is called 90, part of the 90 crew. And I work with Boss Up. And taking this concept of nine core concept and disciplines and how, what do you need to know as a bit as an entrepreneur that you don't know? Because we do the things we like to do and then we don't do the things we don't like to do. So you're in the marketing space. I guarantee your marketing is looking super awesome. But what are the things that you're not that strong on? You've got the 70% or it's the 30%. How are you approaching this in your growth period now where you're trying to go through and you're trying to understand where the world goes?
So there's a lot to unpack there. I want to make sure I got it right in my head. When you were talking about EOS, you're talking about the entrepreneur operating system. Is that what you're referring to? Got it. Yeah. No, there's a lot more that I need to learn on that because I could definitely benefit from it. What I'll tell you I have mastered is being the dumbest person in the room, asking the dumb questions, connecting smart people, and getting out of the way. And so what you're describing in that moment where you're like, okay, I have to embrace humility and bring in someone else, bring in something else to fill in the gaps. How that translated in my previous life was building systems and bringing experts together and not being afraid to ask. Because if in a meeting, when you bring smart people together, the most important person in the room isn't the person with the most expertise. It's the person in the room who knows how to ask the best questions in the right way. And of course, I think that's me, but that's a learned skill. So imagine you have a family member who they're considering going on to hospice, which is that final time of life. And so basically, what they're being asked by a social worker or a nurse is, do you want us to try to keep you alive, or do you want us just to keep you comfortable? And I remember when our family gathered around my great aunt, who's very close to me, we were having this conversation with her, and everyone's struggling. A conversation went on forever, it was painful. And everyone's like, oh, well, we love you. And that's not what this is about. This is about making a decision. So I was quiet, let everyone else do the thing. And then I figured out the question to ask. And I said, Aunt Sharon, if you have another medical episode like you had last week, do you want them to take you to the hospital and go through that? Because you know what that's, you just went through it. Or do you want to stay at home and be treated at home to the best of their ability to keep you comfortable? What do you prefer? That completely changed the dynamic of the conversation. All these really smart people in the room who had good intentions, everyone was talking around the issue, valid statements, but nobody was actually moving the conversation forward with the right question. And that clarifying question, if you can nail it, will completely change the outcome that an organization experiences. We went from a really tough, it felt like a minute was an hour type conversation to a 5 minute, maybe even 30 seconds, to be honest. Of, oh, yeah, like how do we get clarity by asking the right question? So, in a group setting, I think in the corporate world, that makes a big difference. Now, the parallel to that in my current life is in a growth-oriented startup, you have to have that same humility of being, okay, I'm okay being the dumbest person in the room, but you have to then look at yourself really harshly and say, what am I good at? And then figure out what you're not good at. And then you need to find partners that are. And so, if you haven't found partners that fill in those gaps, either you haven't identified those gaps, which is a huge problem, And you should ask others around you because trust me, everybody else sees your faults. So they'll help you. Once you have that formula, now you need to go figure out the solution and find people and bring people in that solve that for you so you can just get back to doing what you're great at and drive the organization forward.
Thank you for sharing that story. Really touching. And yeah, you're right, it did resonate. I wanted to ask you one final question. Right, you're on this journey, you've done many things. What one piece of advice would you give people about understanding themselves, perhaps, or understanding the journey that would resonate?
I think that if you look at the things we see on screens, like movies, TV episodes, the way the world is portrayed to us, it's mostly bullshit. It's somebody's washed, rewashed, rewritten version. I'm currently involved in, there's a movie being done about some stuff that I worked on in the past I was involved in. And seeing that process, that creative process of how the truth gets completely twisted into what can we tell in 90 minutes and make it entertaining and make it connect. And that's too crazy to believe, or that's not spicy enough. Let's spice that up. My encouragement is run your own race. Don't look at what others are doing. Don't compare yourself because most of it's bullshit, especially if you're looking at social media. A lot of this is obvious, right? But I think it's just more overarching than most people give it credit, which is, if you can just figure out what your life needs to look like and not be afraid to ask for that and bring other people in, look at the Gary V's of the world, absolute geniuses. Look at the Chris Voss's of the world, excellent communicators at bringing people into being part of the solution rather than being in an adversarial situation. There's so many great people. And if you're in the United States and you're dealing with the political turmoil and the anxiety of all of that, look at people like Bill Maher and Michael Smerkonish. Those are voices that are more moderate, even maybe if they haven't been moderate in the past, the current version of themselves, and be forgiving enough to say, what is the current version of the person that I'm getting information from? Because they might have done things poorly in the past, and I bet you have too. Why would you limit your access to good information based on a past judgment of that person? So just be more present, less focused on comparison. Get away from the screens for a little bit, go for a walk, interact with people, mingle, get off the cycle of social media doom scrolling, and you'll be a much happier person and you'll also make a lot more money.
Amazing. James, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a great chat. And yeah, maybe we'll come back together in a few months' time and see how that company is doing.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me.